and someone with a lot more computer experience. Picking up his phone, he called Bubba. "You've reached 1-800, call Bubba. Sorry, I'm not available to take your call. I'm either tied up tending someone else's computer nightmare, or I'm out ridding the world of its zombie predators. Either way, leave a message, and as soon as I kill whatever pains me, I'll get right back to you. Thank you for calling, and have a positive day." Nick shook his head as he laughed. At least once a week, Bubba changed out his message. How the man had a thriving business, given his lunacy, was beyond Nick's comprehension. That being said, Bubba was extremely entertaining. After hanging up, he dialed Mark. "Fingerman here. You're talking to my voice and not me. Unfortunately, I'm off with Bubba and not a woman, because I'm dumb. No telling what I'm into, but if this is my parents, I assure you I'm not doing anything illegal or immoral, and I ain't disturbing no farm animals. However, please reserve bail money, because you know the stuff Bubba gets me into, and I might be needing it soon. Everyone else, leave a message, and as soon as I get back to an area where I have reception again, I'll return your call, even if I have to do it from the great beyond. Thanks." Farm animals? Now Nick knew Mark meant cow tipping, which had been a pastime of Mark's from high school, one that had stopped abruptly when a cow fell on him and broke his leg in three places. But the way he had that phrased, yeah, Mark needed a VM editor. Nick sighed as he considered his other options. Wait, he knew another geek. Maddox St. James. If anyone could give Bubba a run for his money when it came to computers, Maddox was it. His classmate had been born with a keyboard in one hand and a modem chip in his brain. Besides, Maddox owed him for saving his hide from the zombies the moron had created and then unleashed on all of them. He scrolled through his contacts until he got the right number and called him. "Hello?" Nick let out a breath in relief that he'd finally reached a living person. "Maddox?"
"Yeah?"
"Nick O'Shea, I have a bit of a problem that I need some help with."
"Homework?"
"Kind of."
"What's kind of homework?"
"You know the new coach?"
Maddox growled.
"The troglodyte who let Stone defile my gym shorts and then wrote me up because I wouldn't wear them afterwards? Yeah, I know him. May he choke to death on a jockstrap not his."
Okay, obviously Maddox had issues left over from P.E.
"What do you need me to do? And does it involve any kind of vengeance on him?"
Nick nodded, even though Maddox couldn't see it over the phone. "If what I'm thinking is true, that's an affirmative. I was wondering if you could do a background check on him and find out where he's taught in the past and what his record at those schools was."
"That sounds tedious. Why do you want me to do that?"
"'Cause I think he's hiding something."
"Like what?"
Maddox asked. "I'm not sure. Suffice it to say that I think he has some skeletons in his closet that might be interesting and useful to us both." Maddox paused as if considering it. After a minute, he agreed to be Nick's accomplice.
"Fine, but it'll cost you."
"Cost me what?" Nick was aghast. "Dude, you owe me. Big time, so log off Doom and help a brother out."
Maddox sputtered.
"How did you know what I was doing?"
"Simple. It was all he ever did. If you ever asked him how his day went, his response was always his Doom progress report."
"A good guess."
"All right, I'll get started and call you if I find something interesting."
"Thanks, Em. Appreciate it."
"Anytime."
Maddox hung up. Nick set his phone aside as he heard footsteps approaching his office. He'd just switched back to the online shopping cart when Kirian came in.
"Hey, boss, I have your coat ready. I just need a method of payment."
"Top drawer on your right."
Nick opened it, expecting to see one of Kirian's credit cards. Instead, it was one with Nick's name on it. Totally stunned, he couldn't breathe as he stared at the Nicholas A. Gaucher on the Visa card. Wow, it was the coolest thing you'd ever seen. Kirian walked over and closed Nick's mouth with his forefinger.
"It has $1,000 limit on it, and it's for business purchases only. If you prove yourself responsible, I'll get you one of your own in a few months with a higher limit. Deal?"
"Yes, sir."
Thrilled beyond belief, Nick entered the number into the fields and finished buying the coat for Kirian.
"I also spoke with Kel, and he said that he'd have no problem putting blades into the Ferragamos, if that's what you want."
"Fantastic. When the shoes come in, make sure they get sent to him."
"You got it."
Nick paused to watch as Kirian pulled the curtain back to look outside at the dark yard, something that was highly unusual for him.
Not to mention, he was surrounded by an air of melancholy.
Is something wrong, boss?
Kieran hesitated before he answered.
Not sure. I have a, I don't know, bad feeling, I guess.
His words caused Nick to have one, too.
About me?
He shook his head.
Ash would quote the song, "There's a bad moon on the rise." I have a feeling it's summoning something that should be left alone.
He met Nick's gaze.
Why don't you let me take you home tonight?
Yeah, okay, Kieran's strange behavior was starting to freak him out a little.
Sure.
Another fear went through him. Did they find another kid murdered?
No, it's not that. I'd feel better making sure you and your mom are safe. Get your stuff, and I'll take you now.
He wouldn't argue that. Nothing better than heading home early.
He shoved his books back into his pack, then slung it over his shoulder. Did Rosa leave already?
About an hour ago. Did you get dinner?
Oh, yeah. Never had turkey tetrazzini before. It was really good.
You want to take some home for your mom?
Kieran's generosity never failed to surprise him. The man was always thinking of other people. Good thing I didn't stake him when I discovered his fangs.
Can I?
Absolutely.
Nick headed to the kitchen with Kieran right behind him. As he was pulling out the container and contemplating his employer's unorthodox existence, a thought struck him.
How do you keep your anonymity in this day and age? Don't people get suspicious over the fact that you don't age?
Ironically, it's easier now than in the past. People today don't want to believe in the paranormal. Back when, you had a serious problem with Bubba and the mob and their pitchforks.
Nick laughed. I know you don't mean Bubba Burdett, but the image in my head, highly entertaining. Kieran smiled before he continued his explanation.
That's why dark hunters have human squires.
Which was what Nick would become once he was old enough to be sworn into the council. They were humans who made it their life's task to protect their immortal bosses and the world that mankind as a whole wasn't ready to accept.
With you guys coming and going during the daylight hours, it cuts down on people being curious. Our property is also listed under the squire's name.
Ah, I get it. So no one knows you exist.
Exactly. Rule number one, be a part of the world, but not in it.
Nick frowned. Rule number one?
When we're created and Asheron comes to train us, we're all given a Dark Hunter handbook. It has a list of rules we have to abide by, and that's the first one Asheron teaches us.
Dark Hunters with a handbook. Who knew? But then it made sense that they'd have a code of conduct to abide by. Which made Nick wonder about Kieran's past and his experiences. Has the world changed all that much?
Kieran shrugged. The toys are infinitely better, but people haven't changed at all. Same concerns, same hang-ups, different clothes, different century.
He made it sound so simple, but Nick had a feeling it was anything but. There was no telling all the changes and marvels Kieran had lived through. The discovery of electricity, flying, television, toilet paper. It must be amazing to live so long.
Sometimes.
Kieran put the container back in the fridge while Nick fastened the lid on his mom's dish. Did you ever have a wife and kids? Nick asked. Kieran hesitated, as if the question bothered him.
Had the wife. Wanted the kids.
Part of Nick told him to keep quiet, but he wanted to understand Kieran's strange reaction. You miss her? His eyes darkened angrily.
No offense, I don't want to talk about her.
That told Nick much about Kieran and his relationship with his wife. It made him wonder if she was the one who'd betrayed him and made him become a Dark Hunter. Man, that had to suck to have your wife betray you. Sorry, I won't mention her ever again. Kieran's features softened.
Be careful whom you give your heart to, Nick. Make sure when you hand yours off, you get hers in return.
Yeah, but how do you know? Obviously, Kieran had been tricked. How could Nick avoid it when someone as smart and savvy as Kieran had been taken? Kieran sighed.
That's the trick.
People deceive and they lie. The more you have, the more they scheme to take, and the more often they try. The world's an ugly place, and apparently many people think it's easier and better to take from others than it is to earn it themselves.
Nick frowned at the bitterness in Kieran's voice. Then why do you fight to protect us?
Kieran gave an odd half-smile.
Because every time I think that it's not worth it, that the people in it deserve the misery of their lives, I come across someone who makes me rethink that.
Like who?
He ruffled Nick's hair as they left the kitchen and went to Kieran's Lamborghini.
A smart-mouthed Cajun who worships the ground his mother walks on. One who was willing to lay down his life to protect two strangers from his best friends, even though he needed the money to eat. A woman who's willing to debase herself to feed her son. Another who faced down a drug cartel in order to protect her family in her small town. That kind of love reminds me of the human I once was. People like you, your mom, and Rosa deserve someone to watch your backs.
Nick thought about that as a warm feeling rushed through him. No one had ever said anything kinder to him, especially not someone so respectable and decent. Kieran was the type of man he wanted to be. What were you when you were human? He asked.
An ancient Greek general.
Really?
For some reason that surprised him. Kieran inclined his head as he pulled out of the driveway and headed toward Nick's condo.
Did you win any big battles?
Oh, yeah. I was the scourge of Rome. Me and my friend and mentor, Julian Augustus, held them back and fought them off like machines. During our human lives, we were regaled as Greek heroes, and our stories were told for centuries after we died.
That was truly impressive. Did you die in battle?
Kieran let out a bitter laugh.
Hardly. There was no man alive who could defeat me. None.
Suddenly Nick understood, as he remembered the one thing he had learned from his convict father. It's never the enemy without who brings you down. It's always the enemy within.
He nodded.
Guard your back, Nick. It's the one you don't see coming. The one you trust whose betrayal is most lethal. They know your weakness, and they know how to hit the lowest. It's when your back is turned and your guard is low that they move in for the kill.
His dad had told him the same thing. Sorry.
Kieran shrugged before he made a right turn.
Don't be. Everyone suffers at least one bad betrayal in their lifetime. It's what unites us. The trick is not to let it destroy your trust in others when it happens. Don't let them take that from you, too.
Nick nodded. You think you'll ever get married again?
No. Dark hunters aren't allowed to date or have girlfriends. Marriage is absolutely off the table.
What about kids?
I'm dead, Nick. No ability to procreate.
Nick cringed and cupped his boys in horror.
So you can't...
I didn't say that,
Kieran snapped as if completely offended.
We can sleep with someone. We just can't impregnate them.
Okay, that made sense. Can you get any diseases?
No.
Nick fell silent as he contemplated what it would be like to be impervious to diseases. He watched the traffic speed past them as Kieran turned into his neighborhood, dilapidated and junked up with broken-down cars and browned-out lawns. It was a stark contrast to Kieran's immaculate stomping grounds. Sighing, Nick saw the stark, weathered duplex he and his mom called home. Kieran parked out front.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah. Stay safe.
Always. Call me if you need anything.
Nick nodded as he opened the door and got out. He didn't move until Kieran had gone. Then he turned around and headed up the broken sidewalk that led to his house. Manyara came out of her side to greet him. Tiny and beautiful, she'd been the midwife who brought him into this world. For reasons she never really went into, she'd taken his mom in when his mom had been pregnant with him. Aunt Minnie had been with him the whole of his life. and she was the only family he and his mom had. Dressed in a flowing white skirt and light blue top, she had her sister locks pulled back from her face with a white scarf.
"Hi, Aunt Minnie."
She hugged him as he drew near her.
"Where you been, boo?"
"At work. Mom home?"
She nodded. "I was heading over to see if she wanted to watch TV tonight."
Since they didn't have a set of their own, Minnie often let them watch it at her place. She also shared her phone with them. Nick opened the door to their tiny condo, which was basically two rooms. His mom's small bedroom and then the big room that had a kitchen area in it. On the far wall was his room, which consisted of blue blankets strung up on a wire. His mom and Minnie had made it for him once he hit puberty so that he could have some degree of privacy. His mom sat on their one and only bar stool at the breakfast counter reading the paper. She looked up and smiled at their entrance. Nick dropped his backpack by the door before he crossed the small area to hug her.
"What are you doing?"
Minnie closed the door, then moved to join them.
"I was looking to see if there might be an apartment for rent in the quarter."
He didn't know who was the most stunned by his mom's unexpected words, him or Manyara.
"Really?"
Minnie arched a brow, but she didn't say anything.
"Nothing against you, Manyara," his mom said quickly. "You know how much I love you and how grateful I am for everything you've done."
"But you want to be closer to work."
Minnie's Creole accent was thicker than normal.
His mom nodded. "And Nick's school. He's always having a run for the streetcar. I'd like for him not to have to start the day off in such a panic."
"The devil is sitting on icicles, isn't he?" Nick asked. She laughed.
"No, sweetie, it's just, you wouldn't believe what people tip at Sanctuary. Oh my God, I had no idea. Between my salary and tips, I'm making 4 times the money I used to."
Nick gave her a hopeful grin. She screwed her face up at him.
"All right. Both you and Bubba are forgiven for getting me fired."
"Really?"
"Absolutely. In fact, I was thinking of taking you and Manny out to eat tonight to celebrate."
That sounded great, but there was one little problem. "I'm stuffed. Rosa made this turkey tetrazzini that is unbelievably tasty. I brought some home for you, too. There's even enough for Manny." He returned to his backpack to dig it out. No sooner had he put his jersey on the floor than his mother sucked her breath in sharply. Nick froze at the sound that usually heralded him getting into trouble.
"Something wrong?"
"What are you doing with that?" She pointed at his shirt. He glanced down at it and wondered why that had warranted her reaction.
"The coach wants me back on the team."
His mom appeared skeptical.
"Are you serious?"
"Yeah, they're short a few guys for the team, so you don't seem happy about it," Manyara said. That was the only drawback to Manny. She had the gift of second sight and knew all kinds of things about him that he didn't say. He gave them both a fake smile. The last thing he needed was for them to find out what the coach wanted of him. God help him if Manny figured that out.
"I'm happy." "Nikki, I'm your mom. Don't lie to me. What's wrong?"
His coach was a psycho. That was what was wrong. But he couldn't tell her that. If he did, she'd go marching into the office and cause such a stink that he'd be framed for sure. When it came to him, his mother tended to lose all sanity.
"Nothing. I promise."
She gave him a look that said she wasn't convinced. Luckily, Manny distracted her while he pulled out the leftovers and took the container to the kitchen. As soon as they were done eating, Manny and his mom headed over to Manny's to watch TV while he stayed in on the pretext of doing homework. Not an entire lie. He was working on something that involved school. Once he was sure he wouldn't be disturbed, he called Madog again.
"What?"
Man, Madog didn't even bother to disguise his irritation at being interrupted.
"Have you found anything?" Nick asked.
"No."
"Nothing?"
"You're missing my point, Nick. I haven't uncovered anything at all. This guy's a complete ghost. There's no background on him that can be found. Not a school in this country has a Coach Divas. And with a name that unusual, he should be pretty easy to find, right?"
Nick sat there trying to digest this.
Madog was right. They shouldn't have any trouble finding information on a guy with a name like that.
"Are you serious?"
"Yeah, the only Coach Divas I can find was one who coached at Georgia Tech in, get this,
1890. 1890, Nick gaped. Like, over 100 years ago, 1890.
Yeah.
He was the lead coach in the first rivalry game between UGA and Tech for the Governor's Cup. Tech trounced the Dogs 28-6, and get this, the next day, the entire team, including the coach, was killed in a fire that started in the building where they were celebrating their victory.
That sucks.
It was something that would happen to him. Crappy Gaucher luck was the stuff of legends. Don't it, though? Anyway, that was the only Coach Davis I can find.
That didn't make any sense at all. He told me he's been coaching for years. He has to have a coaching history somewhere.
Can't find a trace of it, and believe me, I've looked. I haven't hacked the school records. His resume isn't online. Without that, I'm stuck. I don't know where else to look. I've hit more walls at this point than a blind mouse in a test maze with shifting walls.
Only Madog, whose parents were both scientists, would come up with that for an example.
Nick sighed as disgust filled him.
He dreaded what was to come, but he knew it meant only one thing. He'd have to search the coach's office and see if he could find something about his past.
Crap, crap, crap! How do I always get into these things?
Whatever he'd done in his previous life that warranted the misery of this one, he hoped he'd enjoyed every minute of it.
Come on, Nick, think. There has to be another way.
Unfortunately, there wasn't. This was it. He'd have to go in and pray he didn't get caught.
All right, Nick said. I'll get more information for you tomorrow. Thanks for looking it up for me.
De nada, and be careful. I don't know why, but he creeps me out.
Given the fact that Nick was pretty sure the coach had killed his classmate, Davis didn't exactly fill him with warmth and sunshine.
Good night, Em.
Bye.
Nick hung up, then called Caleb, who answered on the second ring.
You dying?
Was that a note of hope in Caleb's tone? Or was he being paranoid?
No, Nick answered, hoping for paranoia, but pretty sure Caleb was hoping he was on the brink of death.
Caleb let out a deep breath.
Then why are you calling me?
I was wondering if you knew anything about Davis.
Other than he's our new coach?
Yeah, Caleb, something a little more than that?
Not really, why?
Nick hesitated, then decided this was the one creature he could trust with the truth.
He threatened me earlier.
Caleb materialized right in front of him with his phone still in his hand.
What do you mean he threatened you? He said in his demon's tone.
Now that was service. Completely shocked by the sudden appearance, Nick looked from the phone in his hand to Caleb, then back again. Yeah, okay, so he knew Caleb had demon powers and such, but dang. Impressive. He hung up the phone, since he obviously didn't need it any longer to talk to Caleb. He told me that if I didn't steal some things for him, he'd have me put in jail.
Caleb snorted. And you believed something that stupid?
Offended to his core, Nick glared at him.
Stupid or not, I'm pretty sure he's the one who framed Dave and then had him killed while he was in lockup tonight.
Caleb rolled his eyes, which set off his temper.
Nick, really? Your paranoia should be the stuff of legends.
I'm not paranoid, he growled. Use your powers and see. I'm telling you the truth.
Caleb gave him a droll look before he closed his eyes and concentrated. Feeling cocky, Nick folded his arms over his chest and tapped his foot. Now the truth would come out, and he'd be vindicated, and one evil little demon would owe him a massive apology. One Caleb was going to serve with a huge slice of humble pie. After a few minutes, Caleb scowled.
I'm not getting anything.
Dread went through Nick. He had a feeling this wasn't good, and he was about to have to put the humble pie back in the oven.
What do you mean?
He asked apprehensively. Caleb's cold stare went right through him.
The coach is human, I know that much, but...
Hope came back as he mentally put an oven mitt on the pie again. But what? Nick asked.
Caleb scowled again. It's like he's a wraith.
A ghost?
Not exactly. Wraiths are apparitions who appear in the form of someone who's living.
Nick was trying to understand. Like an afterimage?
Closer analogy, but unlike an afterimage, a wraith usually appears right before someone dies, to the person who's going to die.
Now that wasn't something Nick wanted to hear. You just sent a shiver down my spine.
Mine too.
Caleb hesitated before he spoke again.
I've been around a lot of wraiths, and he doesn't feel like that either, though. It's a strange sensation, like human wrapped in evil.
Oh, great. Our coach is a pig in the blanket for Satan. Caleb let out a sound of frustration.
You know, there's no dealing with you when you're in this mood. Let me do some digging and get back to you.
I'll be here, unless the coach kills me. Caleb appeared less than amused by his attempt at humor.
Don't let him in the door, and if he shows up, call me.
As long as the fingers work. With one eye fluttering with his annoyance, Caleb vanished. Alone and worried, Nick considered everything going on. None of it boded well for him. In fact, he felt the flames licking his hindquarters. He had to get the coach off his back. That was the first order. One way or another, he had to get free of the lunatic. Wanting more answers, he thought about consulting his book again, but the last thing he needed was another migraine. No, this was something he could figure out on his own. He was sure of it. Sitting down on the pallet that made up his bed, he pulled out the coach's theft list and looked over the items again. Underneath Cody's necklace was Stone's class ring. Yeah, like that would work. He could just see it now in his mind, him walking up to Stone and smiling. Hi, Stone. Would you mind handing me over your ring that's made out of 24-karat real gold? One that had a real diamond in it? Just pretend I'm your girl and give it to me. The werewolf would disembowel him. But because that was on the list, he knew Stone wasn't one of the coach's chosen group. The question was, who else had been recruited, and why had they been chosen? Did Divas know about his criminal past? Nick hated that part of himself. Desperation had motivated him to do some things he wasn't proud of, such as watch out for cops while his friends had shoplifted. At the time, it seemed harmless, a victimless crime, and he made a lot of money that had helped his mom with bills. He'd convinced himself that it wasn't hurting a real person, just some innocuous Mondo corporation that didn't care about people like him. In fact, the Mondo Corps preyed on people like him and laughed while they did it. That had been his justification. On his last visit to see his dad in Angola, his mind had been changed while listening to some of the other inmates trying to excuse their crimes. Last thing he wanted was to be one of them, sitting in jail, blaming the world for his wrong decisions. Nothing was worth his freedom, especially not money, and certainly not hurting someone else. If he could give back some of what Alan had stolen, he would. Unfortunately, he'd use the money to buy food. But one day, he would pay back everyone they'd ever taken a nickel from. There's no way the coach knows about that, because the guilt was so harsh over it, Nick rarely thought about it. And he'd never once ever told a single soul outside of Tyree and Alan who'd been there for it. Since they didn't go to school, the coach couldn't have talked to them. He doesn't know. Yet somehow he'd singled Nick out of the herd for this ghastly plan of his. Looking back at the list, he cringed. The coach wanted something from almost everyone in his first two periods. What an odd assortment, though. Watches, rings, necklaces, and two hairbrushes. Why hairbrushes? How could he get any money from that? His phone rang, startling him. Trying to calm himself, he answered it. It was Caleb.
Where's Manyara?
Next door with my mom. Why?
Do me a favor and go stay with them.
Any particular reason?
Yeah. I just crossed paths with a fringe guard.
Nick frowned at a term he didn't understand. What?
Fringe guard, Caleb repeated. They're bounty hunters who go after other preternatural beings. In this case, he's seeking a demon who's hiding in the body of a kid.
What's that got to do with me? I have a demon hanging near me, Caleb, but not one in me.
Aggravation was thick in his tone. He was searching for a 14-year-old boy, Nick. I think we now know who killed those other teenagers that you and Ash saw.
Another chill went down his spine. Had the demon been in them? Or had he merely tried to get inside them?
But I'm not possessed. Caleb cursed. Would you stop arguing with me, Nick, and just do it? These aren't the kind of creatures you want to meet on your own, and where there's one, there's usually more, and they're not known for their mercy or humanity. So do what I said, and don't be alone. The last thing I want is for you to be interrogated by one. Why?
Nick, I swear, stop acting like a 3-year-old at bedtime and haul ass next door, or I'm coming over there and dragging you over myself, and you won't enjoy the experience.
All right, calm down, put your horns in, I'm headed over. He hung up the phone. Unlike Caleb, he wasn't sure Manny was strong enough to fight something like that. While she was a voodoo priestess, with some rather impressive skills, he didn't want to put her in harm's way. However, she did have a lot of protection symbols in her home. Least he could do was make use of them. Tucking his arm back into the sling, he got up and went for the door. He walked outside, then shut and locked the door. Wrinkling his nose, he curled his lip. Ew, what was that god-awful smell? It was rotten eggs mixed with fertilizer and a dash of vomit. God, smelled like Stone had another accident in chem class. He pressed his hand to his nose and started for Menny's. But the moment he did, a shadow fell over him, and he was grabbed from behind.
Chapter 12. Cursing, Nick spun around, ready to brawl. Then he froze in place and blinked twice just to make sure he wasn't hallucinating. He wasn't. Tall, shaggy-haired, and swathed in flannel and jeans, Mark, who was again drenched in the smell of duck urine, stood on the stoop like a hyena with a broken laugh track.
Boy, you should have seen the look on your face. I ain't seen you that floppy rabbit scared since you were trying to get into the store before the zombies ate your brains. Oh my God, if I'd had a camera on you, I'd have made a fortune.
Incensed over the needless scare the idiot had given him, Nick glared at him.
You dickhead, you're not funny. You're right about that. Funny is you, boy.
He continued laughing until Nick was ready to kick him where it would leave a lasting impression. It was a good thing he owed Mark, or he would definitely give in to that urge. Nick growled low in his throat.
What are you doing here anyway, besides stinking up my porch and skinning a decade off my life?
Mark wiped at his eyes.
Lo siento about the urine, mi amigo, but better safe than sorry when in the swamp, that's my motto.
He finally stopped grinning and got down to business.
I saw that you'd called, and I was trying to call you back, but my battery went dead, so I went to car charge it. Unfortunately, I'd used the car charger to tie my glove box closed, which frayed it, and when I plugged it in to use it, it started a small electrical fire in the Jeep, which ignited a stack of papers and burned out the whole passenger seat before I could douse it with enough coke to put it out. That stuff's not as good at putting out fires as you'd think. Well, anyway, here I am. What'd you need?
Only Mark or Bubba could set their car on fire with a battery charger. Nick would laugh at it if it wasn't A, typical of their luck, and B, pathetic.
Yeah, about that.
Nick scratched at his arm that was in the sling. I took care of it already. Mark actually pouted.
You telling me I burned up my Jeep for no good reason? Dude, that sucks. At least tell me there was a zombie at your door or something trying to kill you.
No, sorry. Mark muttered under his breath. But as Nick stared at Mark's Jeep, which had burn marks on the passenger side window, a weird thought occurred to him. This might be the one person, aside from Caleb, who could really help him in this. At least he was the one person insane enough to try. Everyone else would try to talk sense into him. Mark was also the one person, aside from Manny and Caleb, he knew could keep him safe from any preternatural attack. In fact, Mark live to fight off anything he perceived as not human.
You wouldn't want to do a little recon with me, would you?
That perked Mark up.
What kind of recon?
Well, it's what I was calling you about. I have a teacher at school who is a strange enigma. One of Mark's eyebrows shot north.
So, like, zombie enigma or normal enigma?
I don't think he's a zombie. However, he wouldn't rule anything out at this point. Psycho was the best bet. Still, this was New Orleans, and he was learning real fast about a whole crop of residents that he'd never suspected existed before. So the coach could be some kind of zombie he knew nothing about. And to think, 6 months ago, he'd thought Mark and Bubba were the most bizarre residents in Louisiana. How soon everything changes. Now, they should be so lucky. Nick brought his attention back to the discussion at hand.
He told me he's taught at a bunch of schools, but Maddog can't find anything on him, and I mean nothing. Not a single school where he's taught or anything else. It's like he never existed until my school hired him.
Neil Luddite,
Mark nodded in approval.
I like that. Could just mean the man has a brain. I'm telling you, Nick, we're all gonna get hooked into a massive server one day and become nothing but bytes in a data stream.
Even our primal individualistic essence will be reduced to simple binary code. Could have already happened, and all we are now are play actors in a Rod Serling episode on permanent syndication. In fact, Nick snapped his fingers in front of Mark's face. Can you come back to reality with me for a second? I kind of need you here on Earth for a few minutes more.
Sure. Not that I like it here, since I'm still waiting for my mothership to return, but what do you need?
Nick took a deep breath for patience. Keeping Bubba and Mark focused on task at times was like dealing with a herd of ADD cats at a mouse farm.
Well, the new coach is... He didn't want to tell Mark about the blackmail or theft ring.
While he trusted Mark implicitly, he didn't trust him not to go up to the coach's door, kick it in, then drag him out into the yard to beat the snot out of him for threatening people. Mark didn't like abusers or bullies of any kind and considered beating one of them down a valuable public service.
Something's not right about him. I can feel it.
That was something Mark could understand and agree to. I was wondering if you'd mind swinging by his house to see what it looks like. That might give me some clue about who and what he is. After all, I know how much you like to profile people.
That sparked Mark up a lot more.
You know where he lives?
Nick nodded. I do. It was one of the few things the coach had told him after practice. The creep wanted Nick to bring the loot to his house so that the coach wouldn't be caught with it on campus. But if Nick was caught, that was fine.
Burn the kid. Burn the kid.
All right, then, Mark agreed. I'm through zombie hunting tonight, and since my woman liberated me
by burning everything Mark owned and making him leave, but that was another story.
I'll do it. Get in.
He stepped down from the porch. Nick stopped him from leaving just yet.
Let me tell my mom where I'm going.
Because if he didn't, she'd set his fields on fire once he came back.
He stepped over and opened the door to Manyara's condo. Manny and his mom were already settled on the couch under a thick red and white blanket with all the lights off while they snacked on potato chips and dip. His mom looked up expectantly.
Hey, Mom, can I have a few minutes to run an errand with Mark?
She narrowed her gaze at him.
Crazy Mark.
Mark stuck his head in the door to grin at her.
I heard that, Charisse.
His mom's face flamed. She was actually closer to Mark's age than Nick was. Not to mention, Mark had once worked the door at the club where his mom used to dance, which was how Nick first met him. Lowering her potato chip back into the sack, she cleared her throat and gave him a bashful look.
Didn't realize you were right there. Sorry, boo.
Mark laughed good-naturedly.
Sorry, I've been called a lot worse. At least you didn't insult my parentage while you were at it. But don't worry, I'm not doing anything too weird tonight.
Please don't.
Mark exchanged an amused glance with Nick.
Don't worry, Cher. I'll guard him with my life.
Good, she warned, because that's what I'll be taking from you if you let even one hair on his head get harmed. I'm dead serious, Mark. There is no corner of hell you can find where I will not hunt you down, drag you out, and torture you until you bleed out at my feet. That boy's my life, and I don't want him coming back here in pieces. So don't you pull none of your crap with him around, I mean it.
Yes, ma'am.
As Nick started to leave, his mom aimed one warning, pointy finger at him.
Don't be gone long. You have school tomorrow.
He repeated Mark's last words.
Yes, ma'am.
Then he closed the door.
Whoa. For a tiny little pocket woman, she could be scarier than a rampaging bear on steroids.
Even Mark appeared shaken by her threats. Heading down the steps, her insane rant reminded him of Caleb's stern warning.
Hey, Mark. Do you know what a fringe hunter is?
Duh. We think I am stupid? Who doesn't know what those are?
Nick gave him a sullen stare. For the record, I be the idiot. Thanks to Caleb, though, he didn't have to own that.
You ever fought one?
Mark scratched at the whiskers on his cheek.
Not personally. Don't think I'd want to from what I've heard about them. Got friends who have, though. Why?
A friend of mine told me he ran across one tonight and that I should be careful.
Mark gave him a stare so piercing, it felt like it went all the way through him.
He told you to hide, didn't he?
How do you know?
I can read your body language, Nick. You're scared all of a sudden. What else did your friend say?
That I should stay in protected areas?
Mark closed the distance between them and pulled something out from under his shirt. It took Nick a second to realize it was a silver necklace with a symbol similar to the one on his grimoire.
Wear this. Unless the devil himself comes after you, that'll protect you.
Nick screwed his face up as he caught a whiff of the duck urine, which almost caused him to gag.
You sure?
Mark stood up straight.
I'm still breathing, aren't I?
I think so, but with that stench all over you, it's hard to tell. God knows, I'm trying real hard not to breathe at the moment, and I could understand if you had to stop because of it.
Mark rolled his eyes.
Then trust me, Shortstack. I put that thing through the ringer. Ain't nothing gonna get past it to hurt you. I've staked my life on that many a day.
Nick didn't quite share Mark's faith. Okay, so maybe the necklace was a placebo, but for some reason, it made him feel a lot better to have it. And when Mark put it around his neck, he swore he felt a small spark.
Now they've got me doing it.
If this kept up, he'd be doing swamp duty with Mark and Bubba, sitting in the boot while they search for the undead.
Please tell me I'll have better things to do as an adult.
Without another complaint, he followed Mark to the Jeep. When did you get this? Mark let him in on the driver's side so that he could climb into the undamaged back seat. Nick tried to ignore the stench of burned vinyl and paper. Well, at least it cleared the stench of duck urine. Mark got in and slammed the door shut.
It's always been my backup vehicle. It's what my dad bought for my 16th birthday. She's not much to look at. Still, I'd run her up against just about anything. She's as reliable as they come and faster than you'd ever give her credit for.
The NOS tank strapped between the front seats probably had a lot to do with that. Good thing that hadn't caught fire, otherwise they'd still be scraping pieces of Mark off the sidewalk. Mark rolled down the windows before he took off with Nick buckled in the center of the back seat so that he could lean forward to give him directions. It didn't take long to head over to Frenchman, where his coach had a rental house. A ubiquitous shotgun like hundreds of others in New Orleans, the house had a fresh coat of white paint. The green plantation shutters were left open so that he and Mark could easily see straight inside to where Divas sat watching the same show his mom and Manyara had been tuned into. What was it with older people and news shows? They were glued to it, and while Nick could watch it, it wasn't his favorite genre. Sighing in frustration, he realized this had been a futile exercise. There was nothing here he could use. Nothing. Just another row house with an unremarkable Toyota in the driveway. Mark shuddered.
Man, oh man, don't he look like someone who would play strip poker to lose? Why, oh why, can't that ever be some fine piece of womanhood like Angelina Jolie? Nah, it's always gotta be the one man you'd least like to see out of his clothes.
Angie who?
Mark scowled at him.
Oh, come on, you know, acid burn from Hackers.
Nick snorted. That was Mark's favorite movie of all time, and for some reason, that made no sense to anyone other than Mark. References to it were forever finding its way into Mark's conversations. Meanwhile, Mark continued to rant.
If you're gonna sit in your living room, in your underwear, the least you could do is cover the windows.
Old dude, really? I don't think I can drive you home, Nick. I'm snowblind from the miles and miles of exposed white flesh.
Nick laughed. Suddenly, Mark went silent and cocked his head as he stared at the porch.
That's weird.
Nick leaned forward, trying to see what had caught his friend's attention.
What?
I'm having deja vu.
Most people would disregard that, but with Mark, this could be serious.
What's going on?
Mark shook his head.
I don't know, it's... I know your coach. He's familiar to me for some reason, but I can't think why.
Have you gone to one of the schools he's taught at? Nick asked, hopefully. If he had, then that might give them some well-needed intel on the beast. Mark considered it.
Maybe. What does he teach and coach?
History and football.
Nah.
He stretched that one word out.
I don't think I've ever had him for history, and I know he was never one of my coaches. Their faces are forever burned into my memory.
That information caught Nick off guard. That was something Mark had never mentioned before.
You played football?
Mark stiffened as if the question offended him.
Yeah? I was first-string quarterback all the way to college. Went to school on a full-blown scholarship, too, I'll have you know. I'd have gone pro had I not blown out my knee my sophomore year.
Nick was surprised and impressed.
I never knew you played ball.
Yeah, hello, I was born to it. Where you think I get all my good evasive zombie moves from? My uncle was even one of the coaches who worked under Bear Bryant.
Whoa, that was seriously impressive. Really?
He nodded. My real dad was a coach, too.
This was the first time Mark had ever talked about his father, other than to say he was gone. Bubba had told him that Mark's dad had died of cancer when Mark was 7. His mother had remarried 2 years later, and Mark had felt so betrayed by both his parents that he didn't speak about his father to this day. Bubba said the pain was just too raw for him still. Mark continued to stare at the coach on the couch.
He is so familiar. I can see his face clear as a bell. I just can't remember where, but it's somewhere odd, somewhere I spent a lot of time. If I could just remember.
Maybe you played a team where he was the coach?
Could be, Mark grunted. What's his name?
Divas.
His first name?
Coach.
Mark gave him an expression of pain. I can see your education isn't wasted.
Hey, now, I'm offended. I never thought to ask what his name was, really didn't care.
Who would, since Nick wasn't allowed to use faculty first names? Why waste the brain space to store it? It might kick out something he really needed, like the ability to play Donkey Kong. Now that would be tragic.
Mark didn't say anything. He merely let out sounds of deep annoyance. While he bellyached, Nick looked back at the coach and tried to use his powers to see if he could pick up anything. Nothing was there. It was as empty as the dark street, which made sense to him, since he didn't think the coach was all that deep a well anyway.
Can you pick up anything off his house itself?
He asked Mark.
Not really, there's nothing much here.
Great. Better get me home then, I don't want my mom to kill either of us.
Without another word, Mark turned the Jeep back on and headed down the street.
After a fretful night of dreams where he was forced to steal against his will, Nick woke up completely exhausted. It felt like he hadn't slept at all. Groggy and with a headache that wouldn't quit, he dressed and made his way to school. For once, he arrived early, which was good since he wanted to look around Divas's office and not get caught. This time of morning, the coach was on bus duty. He should have a good 15 minutes alone to poke around. At least, that was his thought until he found the coach's door locked. Dang it all. He looked up at the ceiling in frustration. Was one break really too much to ask? That being said, Nick wasn't without a few skills, one of them being the ability to pick a lock fairly quickly. It had been a gift from one of his dad's roommates, who thought it would be funny to teach a 6-year-old how to enter. Even though he should have, it was a skill Nick had never allowed to atrophy. Just in case. 5 minutes later, he was inside the office. Making sure to stay away from the cameras and to keep the lights off, he went through the desk drawers first. Nothing, just the typical stuff you'd expect to find in a coach's desk. Gradebook, whistle, pens, pencils, paper clips, agenda, hall passes, playbooks, schedules, rosters, player lineup. And then it struck him. Something that had toyed at the edges of his mind last night at the coach's house, but here in the office it was epically clear. There was nothing personal in the entire office. Not a photo, a trophy, certificate, not even an Altoid. Nothing. Hired at the same time as Divas, Principal Dick had completely taken over Peters' office and made it his own. This one looked like the coach could quit and walk straight out the door without packing up a single item, literally. His house last night had been the same way, sterile and impersonal, ubiquitous, unremarkable, just like the coach himself. Everything was forgettable. Now it all made sense. Wow. Divas must owe some serious change that kept him running constantly. What kind of Mondo gambling debt had he accrued? It must be steep for him to live in this kind of fear all the time, a fear that wouldn't even allow him his choice of car. No wonder we can't find any trace of him. He must be staying off-grid to avoid loan sharks or collection thugs. Nick almost felt sorry for the man. Had Divas not been the ruthless killer who was blackmailing him, he would have. As it was, Nick wouldn't really mind handing him over to whoever was after him. Shaking his head, he slid the drawer shut.
What are you doing here, Gaucher?
He jumped out of his skin at the deep baritone of the coach's voice coming from behind him. Ah, crap. I'm dead. Chapter 13.
Trying to act as normal as possible, Nick turned around even though he was shaking so hard he wondered if the coach could hear his knees knocking and his heart racing.
Come on, Nick, think. Don't blow this.
But in his mind, all he heard was the sound of a police siren coming for him to take him away. Meanwhile, an image of him hanging dead in an isolated jail cell danced in his head.
God, don't let that be my psychic powers kicking in now.
Not when he really didn't want them. His panic rose higher. Nick forced it down and decided on the simplest tactic. A bald-faced lie.
Waiting for you, coach.
Devis's gaze narrowed dangerously.
How did you get in here?
Okay, time to seriously jack it up a couple of notches. Save your butt while you can.
He swallowed hard before he answered.
Door was open. Granted, he'd unlocked it first, but it was true.
It had been open when he'd entered, minus one important detail. Normally, such a lie would bother him. However, new rules were applied when dealing with a homicidal lunatic. Devis closed the distance between them to stand toe-to-toe with Nick so that he could intimidate him. He shoved one shoulder into Nick's and glared down his nose.
You're lying, boy. I always lock it.
That wasn't a smart tactic to use on a backwoods Cajun whose father was a career felon currently sitting on death row. One who was used to standing up to the worst sort of people and not backing down no matter what, not even if they were holding a loaded gun on him. As his mama so often said, gauchers don't run. Sometimes you want to, sometimes you ought to. But gauchers don't run. Ever. Nick rose up on his tiptoes to level the difference in their heights and stiffened as his anger overrode every shred of fear, and probably his sanity, too.
I opened it without any problem at all.
Actually, that was the truth. And that made Devis furious.
Why were you in here, boy? What were you looking for?
Since he couldn't admit the truth, Nick blurted out the only lie he could think of.
I lost the list you gave me yesterday, and I need to get another one.
Devis's entire face turned bright red. He reminded Nick of a pressure cooker about to blow its gasket.
How could you have lost the list? How is that possible?
He shrugged with a nonchalance he didn't feel. Mom says I'd lose my head if it wasn't attached to my shoulders.
Guess she's right, huh?
Devis grabbed him by the front of his hideous yellow Hawaiian shirt and held him in two tight fists.
Listen to me, you little punk. Time is running out, and if you think I'll spare you, think again. I need you to get started immediately today. If I don't have five of those items in my hand by three, I swear I'll see you jailed by four, you hear me? And you know what happens to boys who get sent to jail from this school.
A cold chill and premonition danced down the length of his spine at the look in Devis's eyes and the twist of his features. If he'd had any doubt before about Dave's suicide, that ended it. The coach was psycho, and he'd killed Dave.
I'm so dead. How could he get out of this?
A knock sounded on the door an instant before Casey walked in.
Coach Devis?
The coach literally flung him into the desk before he stepped between Nick and Casey.
What?
He snarled down at her. Grimacing, Nick straightened to watch the confrontation. To Casey's credit, she didn't back down or flinch at his irate tone. Dressed in a pair of tight jeans and her red cheerleading camp t-shirt, she was exceptionally cute today. She blinked in that vacuous way Nick was beginning to suspect was staged and smiled.
Miss Dale wanted me to ask you for Friday night's schedule to make sure she knows what time to have us meet the buses. You can't do the playoffs without the cheerleaders, you know? We're a vital part of team motivation, and we've been working hard on new cheers for the playoffs.
She winked at Nick.
It's guaranteed to lift the players' morales.
Nick didn't dare comment on that. The coach growled before he went to his desk and opened the drawer Nick had searched last.
Did I put everything back?
If something was out of place, the coach didn't notice, thanks to Casey's interference. He snatched a sheet of paper out, then slammed the drawer shut.
I already gave this to her.
Casey shrugged.
She said she misplaced it.
The coach cut his glare toward Nick.
There's a lot of that going around lately.
Ignoring the dig, Casey pranced to the desk to take the paper from his hand.
Thank you, Coach Devis.
Then she faced Nick.
Do you mind helping me for a minute? I need someone who's tall, or at least taller than me.
She smiled back at Devis.
You don't mind me borrowing him, do you, Coach?
His snarl deepened as he snatched a piece of paper from his clipboard. Folding it up, he held it out to Nick.
You better remember what you're doing, boy, you hear me?
Nick nodded, and then before he could stop it, the suicidal part of his personality blurted out, That was 3x5, right?
His nostrils flared. 5x3. You better remember it.
Got it. Nick tucked the paper into his back pocket as he silently cursed the coach.
Thank you, Coach Davis,
Casey said, holding the door open for Nick, who felt ill over the entire encounter. How was he ever going to get out of this? Casey led him toward the gym, but instead of heading into it, she pulled him toward the alcove where the vending machines were kept so that they could have a little privacy as the students started arriving for school.
Are you okay?
The concern in her voice mystified him. If he didn't know better, he might think that she actually had feelings for him, but that was impossible.
Yeah, why?
He saw the panic in her eyes as she looked back toward Davis's office.
I thought he was going to hurt you, Nick. What did you do to him?
Like he was dumb enough to answer. Well, there were times he was that stupid. Today wasn't one of them.
It was nothing.
Nick, she chided, that wasn't nothing. That was pure, ugly rage, and you're lucky he didn't re-break your arm. He wasn't recovering from a break, he'd been shot, but he didn't want to get into that with her, so he tried to move past her. Before he could make it, she had her hand in his pocket. The next thing he knew, she'd pulled the paper out and was reading it. His stomach shrank as he tried to take it back.
Give me that!
She moved like a 3-year-old avoiding her parents' attempt to put her to bed.
What is this?
Irritated and annoyed, he stopped chasing her. There was no need if she kept prancing out of reach. All it was doing was making him angrier.
It's mine, now give it back.
She arched a brow at him.
Come on, it's nothing.
Nothing? She asked doubtfully.
It has a lot of significant things on it. Stone's class ring? Have you any idea how much his parents paid for that? The ring rep actually called his father at home just to make sure it wasn't a mistake and that they meant to order something that cost that much.
Nick hissed at her.
Don't talk about this out loud, okay?
She walked up to him and lowered her voice.
Nick, tell me what's going on, or I'll go to the principal with this. I swear I will.
That was all he needed. He could see this scenario clear as day.
Nick? Yeah, Mr. Dick. That's my steal list from the coach that he gave me. If I don't do it, he'll kill me.
Sounded nuts to the one who knew it wasn't. Imagine what it would sound like to someone who hated him.
Coach, Gaucher's a lying piece of trash. You know how they are. Come into the world as worthless thieves.
Principal.
Yes, they're all scheming scumbags out to steal anything not nailed down. Coach, here, let me call the police for you.
Principal.
Very well. I'll just sit here and look down my nose at him while you do it.
Yeah, it'd be some variation of that play. But no matter the exact scene, the ending would always be the same. Him? Dead in jail. No, thank you.
Casey, he tried again to make her see reason. This is between me and the coach. Leave it alone and let me have that paper back.
She sucked her breath in audibly between her teeth as she pulled the sheet away from him.
I'm not real good at that, especially not when I see something that looks like a shopping list and don't think for 1 minute I don't know all about those.
Of course she would. Shopping was what she lived for.
I'm so screwed. Please, I'm begging you to forget you saw that.
Why? He had no choice but to be at least a little honest with her.
Because if you don't, I'll be in a lot of trouble.
And dead by morning. He shuddered at the mere thought. She glared up at him as if debating whether or not to believe him.
Something tells me you're already in a lot of trouble. The coach has you stealing for him too, doesn't he?
Nick's jaw went slack at the last words he'd expected to come out of her mouth.
What?
She gave him a cocky toss of her head.
I'm not as stupid as people think, you know. But when everyone thinks you are, you'd be amazed at what they'll talk about around you.
Such as who's stealing for him?
She nodded.
I overheard them talking about it a few days ago.
His heart sped up at the thought of having someone who could corroborate his story with the principal. If he could get a couple of the pets to back him, he stood a chance of bringing the coach to justice.
Who?
Dave and Barry? His stomach sank. Not good. Not good at all.
Barry Thornton?
She nodded. Both dead. Oh, yeah. All of this was making sense now. The coach used who he could, then killed them off to keep them from telling on him. No wonder Ash had said the attack on Barry hadn't seemed right. It wasn't. Nothing more than human cruelty by a coward who was trying to cover his tracks. What a dog.
You know anyone else?
He asked, hoping to salvage a little of his plan.
No, just them.
Dang her for dashing his hopes again. Suddenly, her eyes widened. You don't think he had any part in their deaths, do you? Absolutely, but he wasn't about to start slandering a school official when he had nothing to prove his suspicions.
Why do you say that?
Well, they stole for him, and now they're both dead. What other conclusion can I draw? That Nick was screwed and probably soon to follow them to the grave himself? He wanted to whimper as he realized just how inevitable that was. He was going to die a poor, pedestrian virgin. Why, Lord, why? She pulled him into the room, farther away from the student crowd that was quickly growing as people came in the back door of the school. Okay, listen, I have a thought. How about I help you? His brain automatically snapped to his previous thought. Nah, I ain't that lucky. She had no idea why he feared dying so young. He must be misconstruing her intentions. Help me do what?
Take what you need.
Oh, yeah, right. Are you out of your mind? He snapped at her. You can't do that, Casey.
Of course I can. I don't want to see you killed. It's not right.
He couldn't agree more. However, he didn't want her to die for doing a good deed either. No need in both of them haunting the gym. Maybe we can go to the principal. I know he won't believe me, but with you there, he...
I have no proof. Why would he listen to me?
Nick shrugged. You come from a good family. Why would you lie?
I don't know. The coach could tell him we're sleeping together or some other lie. You know how adults are. They never believe kids our age, and they're always expecting us to be on drugs or in trouble. Anytime something happens, they immediately blame it on the video games we play, cartoons we watch, music we listen to, or some occult thing that's as ludicrous as blaming D&D and RPG.
She was right. Most adults did do that. But he knew Kyrian and Ash would believe him. And his mom might. Bubba and Mark would definitely, but since they also believed in Bigfoot, Little Green Men, and the Tooth Fairy, no one would ever believe them. In fact, having them on board could be a liability. Still, there was nothing any of them could do without proof. It all came down to that one word. The only way to bring the coach down would be to catch him in the act and to show the principal and everyone else just what a demented psycho he was. We've got to find other students he's blackmailed. Casey scowled.
How?
I have no idea, but you know everyone at this school. Can't you find out something? How did you find out about Barry and Dave?
Same way I did you, on accident. They were talking, and I was walking by like this morning.
That wasn't helpful. They didn't have time for her to accidentally discover all the students Davis was harassing. She'd have to walk the hallway like a brainless automaton, which they'd then write up and put in detention. The clock was ticking like the telltale heart, and he had to steal items and get them to the coach before school let out, or his head would be on the chopping block. He could already feel the guillotine falling. In the end, as much as he hated it, he had to agree with Casey's stupid idea. He couldn't do this alone and make it. I'm going to burn for this. All right, Casey. We're not stealing anything, okay? We're borrowing it. And I will make sure to give it all back once we're done. You got it?
If you say so.
She glanced over the list and selected her items.
I can grab Shannon's hairbrush and Stone's ring without a problem.
Not that he doubted her, but...
Really?
She nodded. We're supposed to be dating. I smile at the oaf, and he let me have it back. For all the money his parents paid, he couldn't care less. To him, it's only something that sits in a box or marks me as his property. I hate that whole territorial thing he does.
I'm lucky he's not marking me in a more personal way.
Ew.
There was a thought he didn't even want to contemplate. Where is the mental eye bleach when you need it? Not close enough. What else? I can borrow Shannon's brush without a problem, too. Good. That just left Nick to pick up his side of the partnership. I can ask Mason if he'll lend me his notes from history. His handwriting was one of the things the coach needed for some reason. Made no sense to Nick, but far be it from him to try to educate a man with a college degree. What else? She asked. Nick glanced back and saw another easy target. Michael's always leaving one of his scarves in the cafeteria. I'm betting I can nab one of his out of Lost and Found. Why a scarf? No clue. Maybe it was the big, hulking man security blanket and he needed it for game days. For that matter, maybe the coach was just hungry. Casey pointed down the list. I can get Cody's necklace.
Nick drew back at her offer. That was the one thing he had no intention of taking. Absolutely not.
No?
No, he repeated sternly. She actually stomped her foot like a kid.
Why, you want to steal it?
Yeah, but he didn't want her to become a criminal either. How awkward would it be to take a date to the prom with a police escort? There were some things a guy didn't want to experience, and that was near the top of his list. We're not stealing, Casey, we're borrowing.
Fine, I'll borrow,
she made mocking air quotes around the word with her fingers, her necklace. And before Nick could protest that declaration, she was gone. Come back, you little minx. But there was nothing he could do. Disgusted, he wished he could call her back without starting a scene. Unfortunately, there were too many students in the building now for him to use his powers. And more were filing in through the doors. Fine. He'd deal with her later. Right now, he had a scarf to find and some handwriting to borrow. Ms. Grider narrowed her beady little eyes on him as he dug through the large box of unclaimed items the school kept in the truancy office.
Are you sure that's your scarf? I don't recall you ever having one before. Seems to me you don't have any coats either. All I remember you in are ragged jeans, hideous tourist shirts they sell cheap at the Goodwill, and worn-out shoes.
Nick cringed at the L&F Nazi's unrivaled memory. At 904 years old, her memory should be going by now, or so one would think, but apparently the only things she'd lost were her personality and human decency.
Well, Ms. Grider, if you remembered everything that belonged to everyone in the school, it seems we wouldn't really need a lost and found, would we?
She glared at him.
That better be yours. I'm making a note of what it looks like and who's taking it.
Of course you are.
If someone comes looking for it, I'm going to tell them exactly who took it.
With a fake smile, Nick shoved the scarf into his backpack and headed out the door.
The things I do for you, Mom.
If it were up to him, he'd drop out of this school and go to one where he wasn't a pariah, one where he was normal and these people were the freaks. But his mom wanted him to have the best education possible. So here he was, in hell, for 4 more years. Again, thanks, Mom. As he headed toward his locker to switch out books, something moved fast to his right. Always on the lookout for Stone or his buds to ambush him, Nick jumped left and glared at nothing. Frowning in confusion, he scanned the wall and saw no trace of whatever he'd glimpsed. Weird. A slow circle turn in the middle of the hall didn't uncover anything either, as the sea of students moved around him. But as he looked, everything slowed down like some replay footage. The pendulum in his pocket heated up. At the same time, he felt Mark's necklace vibrate. His ears buzzed, and some noxious smell filled his head.
That better not be you again, Mark.
He was in no mood for it. No sooner had those words left his lips than the lights in the school went out. The screams of his classmates were deafening and thick, slowed down to match their current speed. Out of nowhere, a bolt of lightning shot through his chest, picking him up from his feet and throwing him down the hallway. Chapter 14. Nick couldn't breathe. It felt like his lungs had collapsed. He hit the wall above their lockers so hard, he wasn't sure how he didn't break through the concrete and crush every bone in his body. With nothing to catch him, he fell from the top of the wall straight to the floor.
dazed and tasting blood, he lay in a heap until something seized him by the chest and shoved him against the wall. It pinned him there in an invisible fist that left him dangling.
"Are you the one?"
The thick monster voice wasn't speaking English, and yet he understood it somehow.
"Are you?"
The one for what? To bleed on his shoes? Check. To dent the wall? Check. To kick his demon butt? Highly unlikely. Nick clapped his hands over the creature's claw, trying to pry it away from his body. It was useless, and rated right up there with stepping on Clark Kent's glasses.
"Let me go!"